What I really love about it is the holistic approach to a single epidemic or outbreak, which is London's cholera epidemic of 1854. And I love the way he looks both at the way this drew in many aspects of society and then had implications for many realms, from city planning to physicians to everyday people. And I think it's too easy to separate out illness into its own category or domain and not think of it holistically as an element that involves and that has entailments for all of society.
Explain how a map of an epidemic can include more than just the details of the sickness. Because when you try to lay on history and cultural values and city planning, how does that all fit together?
You know, I think that maps are, at first glance, kind of restrictive. And one of the things that I always ask my students is to learn to read the atlas like you would read a novel. And so, you know, we see a map and we see topography. But a map contains so much more information and it hides so much more information. So a ghost map or a map of an epidemic, on the one hand, we might think that a map of illness alone only shows the details of the outbreak, but really the tentacles and tendrils of an event like an outbreak have to spread much further and wider than the map itself would suggest if we only took one discipline or one approach to the illness.
Stephen Johnson's book followed the cholera epidemic in the 1800s in London. How do you apply that to modern epidemics?
Well, I think all epidemics weave together in very complex tapestries a very wide array of social, political, and historical forces. And so a form of tyranny or slavery from 300 years ago can impact an individual life or a town or a home right now. And so those forms which seem disembodied, whether they are imperialism or oceanic empire, as we have seen it here in the Americas, or slavery, they are really not at all disembodied. They're embodied.
Can you pinpoint or describe an epidemic of some sort, you know, sort of drill down into a specific example?
Sure. I think the classic example is HIV/AIDS. You know, the restrictive map-like view of it might be that it's just a pathogen that spreads. But we see that it disproportionately affects poor people and people in areas that have long been dominated by other areas. And so the disease is also a feature or a piece of power. So we have history and social inequality converging in HIV/AIDS to reveal a very complex set of social dynamics. And I don't want to just restrict this to viruses. I also want to think about the wider webs that they're situated in. So, of course, malaria is tied to deforestation, but even beyond viruses, we can think about toxicology and, you know, exposures to lead and arsenic and mercury and the pathways of our own computers and phones to waste sites and their production at mines as something like pathogens that disproportionately affect poor people and people in poorer places.
So you're sort of looking at how a disease spreads not just by the pathogen spreading or a virus spreading, but how those pathways are created by factors beyond the illness itself, by either social pressure or group dynamics or culture or practices like agricultural practices that could lead to the way an illness travels through a population?
Absolutely. So if we look at, say, agricultural changes in India, which is my own area of work, we could maybe tie an illness to a set of conditions, including, for example, deforestation, the creation of new forms of irrigation and canals, the eradication of local seed varieties, the introduction of new seed varieties, pesticides, landlessness. And so a single illness, a hypothetical illness, could be tied to a huge variety of features. And then we could even extrapolate out from that landlessness and the pesticides and so on to British colonialism and to changes that happened 100, 200, 300 years ago. So the web is actually, or the map, as you said, is much wider than it appears to be.
Is it difficult to get an epidemiologist studying an outbreak right now and a historian who's looking at something that happened 300 years ago to connect and find their common ground or how they might actually help each other in understanding these concepts?
I don't think it's difficult to get them to connect. I don't think it happens quite often enough. And that's something that is a big area of interest for me.
Well, how do you make that happen? I mean, you're not a matchmaker, really. How do you get these people to connect?
Well, I think you have to be a matchmaker. In current work that I'm developing in India, I'm actually trying to bring together chemists, environmental scientists, physicians, geographers, anthropologists, toxicologists, epidemiologists in one group to study the ways that scavengers or so-called waste collectors might move through a city on a given day and might be exposed to very harmful pathogens and toxins. And I think you have to come up with conceptual spaces like a grant or like a collection, a writing collection, or an actual room and put people in conversation with each other. So there is a kind of scholarly matchmaking that you can engage in.
And is that what you're aiming to do with the symposium that you've created?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm aiming to do, is to put all these people in one room and close the door and see what happens.
So is there a sense that using these methods could eventually lead us to how a disease might spread so that we're actually able to intercede before it reaches epidemic proportions?
That is at the heart of the idea, I think. So a map is something that has three dimensions or four dimensions or a fifth dimension, which is observation. So, you know, it's not just something that's spatial. It's something that has a dimension of time. And it's something that has observers looking from multiple vantage points and that has the participation of the affected people. So it's not just top down. It's also bottom up and it's lateral, it's side to side, so that people are talking to each other in every way and you have a real web work. We do actually have technologies nowadays that allows us to even draw conceptual maps in much more complex ways. Because when we recognize the patterns of the now and the patterns of the past and tendencies, we can make very good guesses at the future where we have to sort of draw new interventions and roadblocks and open new doors.
Does this apply to your research at all? If I have it right, your research focuses on runaways in India, right? So does this apply?
Right. I started out looking in a more confined way at the social forces that drive children to leave home on their own in India, in particular without parental sanction. So these are runaways. But all of my time in India and Pakistan and Tajikistan and other places that I have done field work, I feel like my head was, you know, quite literally turned in this direction or forced in this direction, that people on the street who were maimed and mutilated and dying, literally dying before me or dead before me, forced me to ask this question more and more. And so when I returned from my last fieldwork period in India, I wanted to ask, what is it that's killing people in the same way or making them sick in the same way over and over again? And the suffering is often suffering of the body. Sometimes it's psychological suffering. But when I look at that, I see that historical and social forces are actually producing that. And those historical and social forces are often invisible to the person that they are striking, and they're often invisible to all the observers around them. But they are not abstract. They are everything but abstract. They are real embodiments of inequality and history and various forms of oppression on a person's life. And so somebody can literally be made sick or made depressed or killed by what appears to be a disembodied social force. When we look at a map of an epidemic, we need to look at the casualties as if they are able to speak to the still living. and as if they are able to speak to us, you know, to give us messages about what might have been done. So the map of an epidemic should be also about the still living and for the still living.
Professor Steinberg, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.